Welcome to the Motoring Podcast, your weekly discussion of motoring news. This is episode 186 on Tuesday, the 19th of June, 2018. Hello, I'm Alan.
Hello, I'm Andrew. And this week we'll be talking about how Dieselgate has taken yet another turn. We'll also be discussing subscriptions. And we get a glimpse into see how crazy Ian Seabrook really is.
It's very crazy.
Yes, he is. But first, Alan, you can lead this time.
Rupert Stadler is on leave with limited access to emails and telephone calls. In the meantime, please contact Bram Schott. Yes, Dieselgate gets more and more ridiculous, and quite how Rupert Stadler has phrased his out-of-the-office email, we're just not sure, because he was arrested, taken into custody by the German police this morning following an investigation on charges.
Monday,
I'm so sorry, it is Tuesday already, isn't it? He was taken into custody on Monday morning following an investigation on charges of fraud and misrepresentation. Hooray.
Well, no, I mean, I've been thinking about this, right?
That was a sarcastic hooray, by the way, not hooray, actually.
I want to make that clear if you need to clarify for anyone listening of perhaps a legal persuasion.
Yes, quite
because our legal fund is a little low.
There's a £2 coin somewhere in here. Oh, no, look. Look, there's 20 euro cents.
That'll help.
Actually, I'll take that with me.
But I have been thinking about this because we have, due to how long it's gone on and how seemingly it's not really affected public perception of Volkswagen and everything, we've started mocking this and going, oh, here we go again.
We have, yeah.
But to actually arrest... For the German authorities to arrest a German national of one of their flagship companies, that's really quite serious. And sort of, that brought me a little bit back down to earth with it all and made me think that maybe Europe was just moving a little bit slower than America had.
Well, that's it. I mean, we've been saying for
nearly 3 years now.
It's nearly 3 years. Yes, it is, isn't it? That's really scary. Over 2.5 years they haven't done anything. If they'd done something wrong, if people could actually find evidence of having done something wrong, then they would have arrested people and they would have actually moved because, you know, everybody wants stuff back from Volkswagen, but some form of compensation, but they haven't done anything wrong in Europe. Well, maybe they have done something wrong in Europe.
Mm.
And this is a sign
the other
of
thing,
that.
Yeah, I mean, there is, because there's another piece a bit further on that I'll cover in a minute. But Greg Cable, as ever, our now invaluable source of all Dieselgate news. Thank you, Greg.
One day we should maybe actually have him on, I think.
Yes, it is on my list.
And Ed Niedermeyer as well.
Well, yes, Ed is on my list as well. We're in conversations. I mean, as Greg pointed out, apparently the rumour is, and again, I've gone down the rumour line, and I know we don't like doing that, but the reason
sometimes
this happened is that after the raids, his phone lines were tapped, and it is following a conversation he has had on a phone that has prompted the call to the prosecutors, to the judge, to say, we are worried he is going to tamper with evidence. And the judge has obviously seen enough in whatever that the legal documentation was of what was presented, the evidence was presented, to go, okay, go grab him, put him in a cell, and there's no bail.
Trying to prevent an Enron on this
one. But my point with this is, and we've mentioned this before, nearly 3 years down the line.
Why do they still have anything?
Yeah, what is it? Is it like a problem? Is it a cultural problem? They must keep all records? What? Why has that not been burnt or shot into space or something?
As a company director myself, I have to be slightly careful here. Other than to say, I'd have had the Shred-It vans in straight away.
Unbelievable.
Other on-site shredding services are available. But, you know, you You've had 3 years, people.
Yeah.
I can't believe that you've still got stuff lying around. But hey, it's not for us to actually suggest ways in which they could have stopped
to evade.
To evade, because hopefully it will never come to... Well, no, we'd never use these techniques. I'm just too darned honest, sadly. Mm. On these things. So yeah, I mean, there we go. And yeah.
But this has caused other issues with Porsche and Audi, hasn't it? Because it took only... this happened yesterday morning, the crack of dawn.
Yeah, there've been a lot of meetings.
The whole board was in a meeting. This is the Volkswagen Group board, including the Porsche family. We're in meetings all day yesterday, and they deferred a decision on whether to dismiss or put on leave or whatever. And again, talking to Greg, or seeing through Greg's tweets, it's the Porsche family were blocking this from happening. Now, if that's the case, from a PR point of view of a company that is supposed to be open and transparent, we're all about open and transparency, we're all a lovely company, we don't do anything wrong, sort of blocking moves to go, well, at least let's put him to one side for the time being. We're not saying
just
so that the company has to run, unless it was okay. Because my only thought, the only reason I could think that they wouldn't do that was the whole innocent until proven guilty,
yeah,
et cetera, et cetera. But from a point of running the business, you would perhaps want an interim, like they've done now, where they want an interim boss.
Yeah, from a point of running the company, the challenge is that German legal law is very, very... very German legal law. I'm so sorry. German
very legal, employment is it? Law.
I'm just thinking ahead, and I'm thinking to other conversations I've had, which have had nothing to do with this podcast. German employment law is very complex, and it is very much biased towards the employee rather than the employer. So I think that they would have to be particularly careful, because if they do it wrong, it could end up costing them yet more money.
Mm.
Big time. So you know, German employment law means you have to be very, very careful about these. It's very hard to sack someone in Germany. Mm. The discussion came up because I was talking to a German company this afternoon. But
so who's the chap that's going to be the interim CEO?
Well, exactly. So the chap who's the interim CEO is, according to his official Volkswagen biography, which is on the screen in front of me, a chap called Bram Schott, who was born on July the 12th, 1961, in Rotterdam in the Netherlands. So here's the first thing. It's not a German at the top of Volkswagen Group at the minute. It's a Dutchman. He's married. He has two children. He has graduated from the University of Bradford with a master's in business administration. That's impressive in itself. However, he went on. He completed additional courses whilst working, including at Harvard Business School and the INSEAD Fontainebleau Business School as well. Joined ABN AMRO, the big Dutch bank that was bought up by RBS, which caused all sorts of issues for RBS. A year later, he moved to Mercedes-Benz, worked his way up through the executive management program, lots of positions at Mercedes-Benz Netherlands, until 2003, where he became president and CEO of Daimler Chrysler in the Netherlands. Moved from there to Italy, still with Daimler Chrysler, and in 2011, he joined Volkswagen Group, as where his role was overseeing strategic projects in group sales. Since 2012, he's been the director responsible for marketing and sales within Volkswagen Commercial Vehicles, and he joined the board of management as a member for sales and marketing at Audi on the 1st of September 2017. And today, according to this, the supervisory board of Audi AG has decided to transfer the duties of the board of management chairman to Abraham Schott on a Abraham Schott on a temporary basis. So he is the temporary chairman.
Well, I think he's on leave. Yep. Okay.
Yeah. So lots of mostly an outside person from Volkswagen.
Mm.
which is something that we and others have commented on before.
Yep.
But there is one second follow-up-y, diesel-gate-y, Volkswagen-y story, Andrew.
Well, yes, this one puzzles me a little bit. But Volkswagen AG is to pay 1 billion euros, which is $1.2 billion, in a fine imposed by the German prosecutors. Now, according to the Bloomberg article, for cheating to get around diesel emission regulations.
Yes.
Now, that... I didn't realise they were being prosecuted for cheating diesel emission regulations.
But again, it comes back to what we were saying. But that seems... In Germany. Maybe we should have chosen a different source. Sorry, Bloomberg. You could be right. But on the other hand, you're an American publication talking about stuff in Europe, and stuff gets a little bit weird when that happens.
Yeah, so...
Anyway, $1.2 billion to deal with the path and gradually restore trust again in the company and the auto industry, according to Herbert Dice.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Does anybody have a running somewhere? There must be a how much has Dieselgate cost in fines?
Calculated? No, I keep meaning to do a timeline. I think Automotive News Europe might have something.
That's the most likely source. The trouble is whether or not the screen of this 21-inch iMac is actually big enough to show the size of the numbers involved.
Thinking that perhaps when I do the timeline, it will need not to be done in, you know, to be done at 1/1000 scale, will need to be, so I don't know, the length of a sports ball pitch
or something. It is getting
that way. Because so many things are happening. Well, I didn't mention the actual sports this time. I nearly did, but I prevented myself.
Is that a Mexican sports ball pitch? Ooh, that almost sounds like I know, I heard that somebody won a sports ball game.
There's games going on. Many of them. Anyway, news.
New news. Vauxhall. Zafira, Tourer and GTC are being axed. I think you're wrong. Due to what Sam Sheehan of Autocar has described as the rise of SUVs, which just sounds really cool.
Well, it's interesting, actually, in this one, when I saw this was in our list, that the GTC...
Yeah, it's a three-door Astra.
I know. But I've always thought that was a bit of a precursor to the slightly raised hatchbacks and estates.
All right.
Because of the mass of metal there is... And it is quite large.
Yeah.
And it always seems a bit high up, really, for what it is. But if you can see how they've taken that idea and then gone, we raise it higher. Because I think the GTC is actually quite a reasonably attractive car.
Yes, it is, especially in VXR format.
Mm.
Brr. However, so that and the Zafira Tourer, which is just the Zafira... are away. So that means that the Vauxhall won't have any 7-seat cars anymore.
No, not until they cross-platform with the 5008. Or
5008. Well, we're not allowed to call it that. 5008.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, Eon Productions get a bit grumpy about stuff being 00s. Genuinely. The problem came up with the 1007. Originally, as you can imagine.
5008 then, sorry.
5008, yeah. That means the Grandland X. Do you think they'll do a stretched version called the Grandland XL? Or maybe they'll just choose a new, decent name?
Please change it. Change the naming, because it's awful.
The thing that keeps bugging me with Vauxhalls is actually all the vehicles are relatively decent these days.
And the Mokka isn't.
The Mokka's all right. It's a bit teetery-tottery, but it's all right. Mm. Everybody says great things about the Insignia. I really liked the five-door Astra I had.
The Insignia, yes, I've heard lots of good things about that, to the point where I'd even quite like to try it. And I have historical issues with Vauxhalls.
But you do.
But I can see they have moved on significantly. Yeah. But I know several parents who've got a Grandland X, and they are very complimentary of it, and they're very happy with it. So they're doing something right with that.
Well, it's the same. It's the same platform as the 3008. He almost says 3008, but yeah, 3008. So you know, it's the start of how things are going to be. I'm interested to see as there is this changeover. I'm interested to see what happens with the Vauxhall and Opel model line. I was thinking about this actually, having following on from. We don't have many stories tonight, so there's plenty of time for chat. I was interested about the platform sharing between, which is going to happen when Opel and Vauxhall start using more PSA ones. And I was thinking about the Aygo, that of course I drove the other week, and that we've got, it's an excellent special edition out, which people might want to listen to at motoringpodcast.com or via your podcatcher. And how, of course, that's another use of that platform. So you could have a Vauxhall and an Opel version of that, and that would replace the Vauxhall Viva and the Opel Karl, which are the sort of little tinny ones.
Yeah, I've seen a couple around here, only because it's one of the two dealerships we have in this town. But they look, they don't.
They're not very in, they're a bit old person.
And that's what they've been driven by, the two that I've seen.
Yeah. Whereas at least the Aygo 107C1 are kind of funky and youthish.
Yeah, they may attract
the wrong younger, sort of people.
The younger pound.
The younger pound. Well, exactly, yes. Yes. So that was just, sorry, that was just me warbling on, really.
And no, because I think it is a valid point, because there's been lots of talk about Opel and Vauxhall are going to be the electric wing of it and help push on that front. Because talking of Opel, I saw on Twitter this week that they're going to stop with OnStar because, of course, that's a GM thing.
We talked about that ages ago.
And did we talk about that?
Yes, we did. And you were grumpy and you were going, oh, well, so farewell then.
I would be a bit hacked off if I'd just paid the subscription.
Well, there is.
It'll
I'm
just
sure
get
that
turned
be.
Over into whatever the new thing's going to be called. So, anyway, moving on. Subscriptions.
Oh yeah, that's sorry. as you do, yes, totally planned.
A lot of premium manufacturers have been dabbling, putting their toe in the water of the subscription model, mainly abroad up to now, but. Jaguar Land Rover have announced a UK subscription service, and this is going to enable 12-month access to JLR cars, starting at £910 per month.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Al and I were running through the numbers before we hit record, and actually, considering what you can get in this, it's not a bad price.
I think it's a...
Particularly if you do some miles.
Steal, to be honest.
If you do some serious miles, this sounds really, really good.
Do you want to run through what... It's called Carpe, as in DM.
Yes.
A bit weird.
And you don't need a deposit, do you?
It's zero deposit. It's essentially you subscribe in chunks of a year. So you get a vehicle for a year, and you can't switch cars. Now that changes it from the Volvo equivalent, which is called Care by Volvo.
Isn't that lovely and warm?
It's lovely. It's like a
Scandinavian hug in words.
It's like a fika. It's like a stand-up automotive fika. Coffee not included.
Everyone rushing off to Google to find out what that means.
It's F-I-K-A, it's not rude. I promise. Either that or some books have been telling me some very wrong things over the last 3 or 4 years. So So the Volvo one lets you swap vehicles, lets you loan other vehicles. The Jaguar one doesn't. But it includes the use of the vehicle for a month, all the servicing, all the maintenance, all the insurance, all the roadside assistance.
As it says here, in case of breakdown.
In case of breakdown. Which I'm sure is unlikely in the new JLR. And also delivery. Which you kind of hope, to be perfectly honest.
You have to write that in.
And that's unlimited, it seems, for an unlimited mileage. So an example here, given in an Autocar article, is £2,200 a month for a Range Rover Sport HSE. That actually seems like a bit of a deal when you consider all of that together. And we were discussing... Andrew and I were discussing before the show that for businesses, this is a great thing.
Well, yeah, it is, absolutely, because it's going to be very nice and neat on the account and the spreadsheet, and they're going to know exactly what's going out every month. The only variable will be the fuel, which you can probably calculate quite tight if you've got an idea of the mileage the person's doing anyway, or the vehicle. I would presume this is... for a person rather than a business. I'm just thinking on the insurance side of things.
Quite possibly, but I imagine
rather than it be, say, a pool car, where that'd be interesting whether it is that or not. Because I can see a business saying we would like an XE that will do all our journeys for us. Because we've got this fixed cost of running it apart from the fuel, because we know it's going to do this sort of mileage, because we don't need, you know, the three people who go out, we don't need them to have a car each.
Yeah. I'm not sure that would be quite the case. I'm sorry, I'm looking, as we talk, I am trying to see if there is actually something on... I've got the Jaguar page open.
Yeah, because you knew you were saying there about the mileage.
Yeah.
It does mention in this Autocar article, which will be linked in the show notes as ever, that there is no mileage limit on the scheme, but users will be offered a new car if their mileage exceeds a certain undisclosed figure.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough.
Yeah, it's just wondering what that... I mean, I would presume that's quite high.
It's going to be over 20 anyway. It's going to be 20 to 25 anyhow. I don't know. I can't actually find a reference to this on Jaguar's own website.
Yeah. So I think that's quite an interesting interesting service being offered. And I think it's probably quite a safe little dipping the toe in, A, for the UK market, but also for Jaguar Land Rover. Because this will... If you're doing it on a 12-month thing as well, it does help registrations.
Yeah. Well, it does. And the
being funny here, but I mean, they're obviously doing this so more people have cars so they can produce more cars and have them on the road.
Yeah.
And they're trying to do it in a way that will... They're realising, as all manufacturers are, that they've got to come up with different ways of this, of enabling people to get hold of the cars and be able to use them. And that's... Through forgetting political uncertainty, forgetting that, but yes, just from...
Which you'll notice is a story we haven't included this week, actually.
No, we haven't, actually. But just from a, you know, the pounds in people's pockets that are free to do other things is becoming less and less. So they've got to find a different way of allowing people to access it. Otherwise, you know, they're... It's going to cause a vicious circle, isn't it?
It is. Absolutely is. Yes.
But I quite like that, because you were talking me through the Volvo subscription model.
Yes.
You just hinted at before.
Well, we never really talked about that, the Care by Volvo. The big difference between this this JLR one and the Volvo one is that the Volvo one lets you swap out vehicles. Now, in the UK right at the minute, it's only available on the new V60 and the XC40, if you can get your hands on one. And the thing is that if you have one, and you're running an XC40 or something, and maybe the there was a new XC90 became available on the scheme, and you have that, and you the XC40 is fine most of the time, but then you want to go on holiday with the family and you want to go to South France or something, then you could swap it out for an XC90 for a week or two. And that's not unusual, because actually, thinking about it, and this was something we didn't discuss earlier on, is that some of the BMW's EV packages let you do that. So if you have an i3, you can, depending on what, it all gets heinously complicated, which is one of the reasons I didn't buy an i3 instead of the MX-5. But depending on what level of package you decide as part of your subscription, or which options as part of your subscription you choose, then you can actually swap out a car and say, well, you know, the i3 is great for 48 weeks of the year, but there might be another 4 weeks of going on holiday and going around the country and stuff where maybe I would rather have a 3 Series estate. So can I have a 3 Series estate and then use that for my holidays, and then swap that back in for my i3 whenever I'm back at home and just doing my usual 20 miles each way commute, which means I only have to charge 1.5 times a week and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that idea of, you know, I am paying for this normal model most of the time, and maybe there's a premium if you needed something significantly bigger or much further.
Yeah, you pay
range.
A little bit more, but it should be less than renting.
Yeah, yeah.
Renting,
I mean, it will be, you know, here's your flat monthly fee, and you are paying, you know, whatever it is, £100 extra, £200, whatever it is on top that isn't outrageous.
Yeah.
To get the, you know, the posh top end of the market, because you want to take it home and show your friends and show off, or, you know, like you say, throw the family in the back and go off to the beach for 2 weeks.
More junk than you normally do.
Yeah, exactly. And that, I think, is one of the ways that these manufacturers will keep brand loyalty as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I talked about mobility before, and that article is, of course, it's still on Motoring Research. And that when I talked about it there, I was talking about mobility as a service. This is starting to move towards vehicle as a service.
Mm.
I want a vehicle, and I want it for a year.
Yes.
Here's how much I'll be paying you each month for me to have a vehicle for a year with nothing extra to pay other than fuel.
Yeah. And in that time, the vehicle may be for most of the time, will be a small family hatchback size.
Yeah.
And then for this weekend here, I would quite like this one, please, that's larger because I have to move a wardrobe. You know, it's that sort of flexibility. From the manufacturers realizing that people's lives, that, you know, that, because they don't make one car that suits everybody or suits every need that you have. I mean, I'd suggest perhaps, you know, the AMG E63 Estate or maybe an RS6 is close.
It's close, but it's not a great city. Well, it's automatic. It's probably not a bad city car, actually.
Just the running costs might be a little high, you know, the petrol. But no, but there isn't, is it? Because people have different needs at different times. So, you know, talking that through with you, I really started to get that, because I was thinking, why would you do subscription? Because then you're standing on the toe, you know, brokers will probably are doing this thing. Why are you? But now I can really understand it, particularly from a brand loyalty point of view. So that's
there's that too. It's dead easy to renew. It's just like insurance, really.
Yeah. Cool.
That leads to the, will you, if you stop and then you go back and go in as a new customer, will you get a better deal? It can't be that much. So no, it can't be that bad. Next up, moving swiftly on from the joys of the UK insurance market, Zapmap.
Which is excellent.
Zapmap is awesome. We would not have been able to do Charging Around Britain without Zapmap.
No. And thank you to Zapmap for changing their web-based service as a result of me pointing out something, because no one had asked these questions of it before.
Yes. We
push the limits not only on the technology and the car and ourselves, but also of all the infrastructure involved.
Yeah, including the route planning. So if you've got an EV and you're going more than just whatever routes you get used to and charging in the places you get used to, you do these days tend to need an app. There's a couple of really good ones. There is PlugPoint and ZapMap were the ones that really got us around the UK when we were doing Charging Around Britain last year. ZapMap has now, it is now possible to map a, to find a route and do route finding in ZapMap. Previously, it was a case of going, oh, I know roughly how far I can go and I need to go, I think that one there. Now it will actually give you route finding.
Because they've got the ability, which they've had all along, but to have whatever electric vehicle you have is in their system, you can say, I'm driving the Hyundai Ioniq. Yeah. Right, you need these pins. We will only show on the map for the place you want to go to. These are the locations.
And that's why it's so valuable, by the way. It's not just, here are all the chargers. It's like, here are the chargers that work for you.
And you can also narrow it further down to say, look, we just need rapid chargers, please, or slow ones or whatever. And it will, and the map will just show that, you know, it's got that level of granularity, which is really excellent, but vital as well. Yeah, we found it.
We did find it absolutely vital. It's a really, really good service. If you have an EV, even if you're considering an EV, actually, it's worth a good look at this to just
chuck in your holiday
route. Regularly do.
Yeah.
Not even your holiday. Yeah, your route to your granny's, all these kind of things, and just work it out. And it can suggest charges that are on your route, all sorts of things. You can limit it by which network you want. So. If you have a preference, say to use polar chargers because you've got because you use OVO Energy at home, and so you have the free, you can get the free Polar Plus, or for a minimal fee extra, you can get the Polar Plus card, and you don't want to necessarily use Ecotricity on the motorway because you know that your machine's your car doesn't really like the Ecotricity chargers, then you can put that in and it'll give you a route that will reflect that and your preferences and the needs of your car and suss it out.
Yep.
Brilliant. Thank you so much.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. The route finder is brilliant.
There's a really good instruction manual which I've accidentally clicked on and have on my screen in front of me, and it is really good and really clear.
Mm. Cool. Well, no, it is excellent, and it's very easy to use. Their site, they have put a lot of thought into user interface.
Yeah. So, because we're huge fans of theirs, so I know that sounds like an advert, but we're not being paid for it. What is an advert, however, is what's coming next, because it's that point in the show, roughly halfway through, where we remind you that if you do think that what we do and the content that we give you is worth a little bit of your hard-earned cash, then please don't forget to head to motoringpodcast.com and click on the orange Become a Patron button on the front page, where you can take a little browse to our Patron page and you can see what you can get in return for that in return for your subscription. Patreon takes a small amount every month in US dollars, I'm afraid. Sadly, we can't change the currency. It's a fantastic way to support not just us, but other creators that you like and whose output you enjoy. Yep. We understand, of course, that not everyone has the ability to do this, so please don't forget to like, rate, and leave feedback via the podcast playing platform of your choice. Quick announcement about podcast playing platforms, of course. So as well as Apple Podcasts, where you can get, getting a thumbs up there for saying it right, because we don't use the tunes word anymore.
No, the Apple then, ninjas come down and beat us up.
Yes. Then Google finally is launching its Google Podcasts store, Google Play Podcasts, isn't it?
It's really snappy title. I know that.
It is. So finally, there will be podcasts available easily on Android phones, which for people like us is awesome.
I believe if you have an Android phone and you use Google Search, in the search options, podcasts now come up in the results as similar weighting as though it was a video or it was a written thing. However,
someone try it and tell us, please.
Yes, because we don't know, and this is all we've been led to believe, and Google says. But apparently it comes up, and then you can click on it there, and you are given options to subscribe via the browser or the Google Assistant and whatever. But you will also be able to do it via, if you are one of these insane people that has a Google Assistant home kit thingy, whatever it is, I don't know. The Google speaker, the lady in the tube, I don't know. Is it a lady or a man? See, I know so little.
I imagine she's a lady. She's a lady. Yeah, I would imagine she's a lady. I don't know. I don't have either of those options.
Well, I know the Amazon and the Apple tube.
We can't say their
females.
Names, no, everyone. We can't, otherwise, we'll activate them and it'll drive people crazy. So, yes, anyway, if someone could try that and tell us, that'd be great. Rearview will not be in there, but Motoring Podcast should be. Rearview might be in there if I take some time to play with,
code.
VPN systems and stuff.
No, I believe you're not going to need that.
I believe I won't. Okay, I'll have a wee investigate.
It's to do with code in headers.
Is it?
Yes.
I will send you
an article.
Could you send me the article? See this? This is us discussing this stuff in action. Yes. If you could, because I believe that our header codes should be pretty decent for that.
Yeah. Okay.
We use Squarespace, by the way. They're really, really good. And once again, I'm publicizing them without taking any money from them. Because let's face it, every other podcast you listen to is sponsored by Squarespace, isn't it? that's how I use them. Podcast advertising works, people.
That's how I found out about them. Anyway, thank you to everybody that does support us via Patreon, and thank you to everybody who has subscribed and is listening to us without having to take the effort of checking social media for when we shout that we've got a new episode out.
If we may remember.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, anyway, moving on, motorsport. Now, yes. This is our once a year coverage.
This is your shut up, Alan, and stop waffling.
Well,
yes,
once a year coverage. Le Mans, and finally, and from both of us, this is a massive congratulations to Toyota after the heartbreak a couple of years ago, and it really was absolute heartbreak. They came through in first and second. The number 8 car was first, and the number 7 car was second. There were 2 sets of drivers.
We're just reminding everyone that this is the case, because maybe not all of the press has done this.
No, quite. But to come through 24 hours in any race, whether it is C1 or LMP1, and the only real problem Toyota had was them not putting the stopwatch on themselves well enough and missing a pit stop. That's amazing. Because you did some man maths.
I did some nerd maths when it finished. I thought, how far have they actually gone? So I took the number of laps, I multiplied it by the length of Le Mans, and I came, Le Mans circuit, and I came out at something like 3,200 miles, around that, in 24 hours. Now, that's the equivalent that I, who's a high-ish mileage driver, above-average mileage driver in the UK, have done in one of my cars in 3 months. And they did that in 24 hours.
And I've done a bit more they did that, it but. Not just those two on the track.
with other people in the way as well, and very much in the way at times.
Yes.
it was awesome. I caught more of it than you, I think.
Yes, unfortunately, I could not watch too much of it.
That's called family stuff, Andrew.
I was not denigrating the fact that I was with my family. That was not a complaint. I was merely saying that, unfortunately, I couldn't see more of the race.
Yeah. No, it was
not
excellent.
The reason why I couldn't see more of the race.
No, I know. I know, you're not brave enough.
Well, no. Yeah.
I'm not brave enough either, by the way. I should like to point that out.
Yes.
it was an excellent race. The bits that I saw, I thoroughly enjoyed the Radio Le Mans Commentary,
absolutely,
of course,
brilliant as ever. Absolutely
it was cracking,
brilliant. Yeah. They're just, I'm blown away on several fronts. One, anyone who can talk for that amount of time live.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even just doing a normal, say, a 6-hour race or a 3-hour race live, and not tripping over themselves or not getting tongue-tied, and being able to do it in a very natural way that's engaging is phenomenal. Then you've got the depth of knowledge they have.
Yeah.
And the fact that they it's just like you're listening to a conversation.
Yeah, it's great. It's really good. I mean, to put it into perspective, last week when I was really tired and really grumpy, I delivered 7 hours of training and had talked pretty much nonstop for 7 hours during the day. And I was grumpy and tongue-tied and really couldn't be bothered last week. Allied to the number of Dieselgate stories, it was just too much for me.
So I was
but
chipper.
You hadn't spoken to anyone all day.
I was chipper, so I made it up. I made up both of
us. It was driving me crazy. But so for those guys to do and to deliver for 24 hours. In fact, it was over 30 hours of non-stop broadcasting that the team did.
Yeah, and then there was the stuff they did in the week leading up to it. And,
exactly.
And then it's how many podcasts did they get out as well?
Oh, goodness, I don't know. But it was an incredible achievement, incredible achievement.
Absolutely
almost
brilliant.
As great an achievement as the numbers 7 and 8 cars.
Yes.
So shall we run through the drivers?
Yeah, go on then.
So number 7 car came in second, was driven by Mike Conway, Kamui Kobayashi, and Jose Maria Lopez. The number 8 car, which was of course victorious, was driven by Sebastian Buemi, Kazuki Nakajima, and, in case anybody's missed it, Fernando Alonso as well. Well done to all of them.
Yes, absolutely.
And I don't mean any sarcasm or anything in there.
But there was. This has not been without controversy, though. This race, has it?
No. So the G Drive Racing team came in third.
First in LMP2 and third, I think it was in LMP2.
Oh, pardon me. Yes, I may have got that mixed up. Anyway,
so it was Rebellion that was third in the overall.
Sorry, thank you. Yes, I did know that. They got disqualified
yesterday.
Because there were yesterday, not at the time, because there were. Should we be polite and say irregularities with their fueling rig?
Apparently,
allegedly,
they cut out the part of the pipe to allow it to flow in quicker, which was
the restrictor had essentially been removed
because they were filling up 6 to 7 seconds quicker than everyone else, where people were going, well, they haven't got enough fuel in,
mm-hmm,
or they're completely cheating. But then by calculating how long they took to fuel to how many laps they could do, people were going, that's not realistic. With LMP2, there's no minimum time to fuel. Mm-hmm. So to do it quicker is actually an advantage. It's only through when I see things like this happen that I realise that each grade has its own separate set of regulations.
Oh, it does, yeah.
Tied in. I mean, I know some of them are going to because they're, you know, they're so much quicker, they're so much slower, that sort of thing. But things like the fueling,
mm-hmm,
you would think that would just be you fill it and then you get on your way.
Yeah, well, that was one of the things that the number 7 car got caught out by, wasn't it? Because they missed the fuel. They missed the...
the minimum time. They were too quick, weren't they?
Well, they missed the pit exit, and they missed pitting.
Oh, and sorry, so that then one. Yes.
Then they realised partway round, and then they were like, "Oh no!" So then
slow
they
down.
Went slow to try and not use as much fuel. But it turned out they went over the fuel amount they were allowed, because the cars are allowed a bigger tank than they are amount of fuel to carry or amount of fuel to use. So they ended up essentially going into the reserve, despite the fact that they had to slow down because they realized and tried to not cross the rule, break the rule, but too late. Because they can't actually, during the race, they can't actually measure the amount of fuel that's being used, only by the number of laps that they expect people to do. So that even if you slow down to try and save fuel, that doesn't actually help, because it's the calculated number of laps, not the actual number of laps, the calculated amount of fuel, not the actual amount of fuel. So they still got a 10-second stop-go penalty.
Yes.
So they got they got a 10-second stop-go penalty for using too much fuel overall, and they got another stop-go penalty for staying out for another 10-second stop-go penalty for staying out for too long, which was all a bit of a guddle, despite the fact that it didn't mean that they ended up extremely ahead of everyone, and that they had intentionally slowed down to try and save themselves from the initial mistake.
Mm.
That they realised they'd made. And it all got a little bit tense and a little bit weird, and everybody going, it's all a bit much. Come on, can you not make it a bit simpler, please? Come on.
Talking of tense, it must have been tense when I think it was Lopez spun it on the first set of corners as well. Partway through the race.
The first corner was a bit, I think everybody sort of went,
oh, yeah. He spun it and there's no one else there and he's still in the middle of the track. That's okay. We could still do a 1-2.
Yeah, awesome. And there's a great, you're going to include, there's a link to a great episode about,
article.
Remember how I said how amazing it was that they'd spoken for so long? I've only done 4 hours of speaking today, really. So there's a great article on Speed Hunters, all about the importance of this to Toyota, and well worth a read.
Yep.
That can be your lunchtime read, if nothing else.
Yes. Yes, it can. Just to run through the rest, the GTE Pro category was great fun to watch. The two Porsches and the Ford GTs fighting it out.
Almost literally.
Although I think the Rothman liveried Porsche was a little bit naughty a few times.
I don't think it was Rothman's. I think it might be a livery that was very similar to Rothman's, but thanks to tobacco advertising rules, it was definitely not Rothman's.
Oh, okay. Thank you for clarifying that. See how little I got to see it. I was actually able to see a bit of the weaving down the straight where he did it 4 or 5 times to stop the GT being able to get past. But the Porsche 911 Pig livery. Livery of the race, absolutely fantastic. As my eldest pointed out, I went, that's got the cuts on it from a pig. Yes, it has.
What? I've seen the original up close in the old Porsche museum, where you could like touch the cars if you were that kind of person. Amazing car, amazing.
Yeah. I think in the GT Am, the Patrick Dempsey backed race team won, and my gosh,
well, he was driving, mate, wasn't just backed,
though he was on the wall. God, he didn't half show what it meant. And that was brilliant to see as well, that it really, you know, this, and you could see that from the interviews that I managed to see some interviews before the racing started with the drivers, and they all want to be there. They all want to do it. You know, it's a bucket list for fans and for drivers just to be there and experience it and try and do it. And it just, it's just reinforced the mad desire I have to go there 1 year. I'm not going to bother saying next year, because probably something else will crop up.
You know the Patreon bit earlier on. Yeah, let's just remind you of that.
Yeah, everyone wants to start upping.
Upping patrons, or if someone could let us know in good time that they're going to invite us, then that would be nice as well.
Oh yeah, if someone wanted to invite us, that would be.
Yes. Anyway, meanwhile,
as we've just begged there, let's move on.
That was genuine grovelling, although.
Well, actually, there is another article. There is the Sniff Petrol Roundup for Le Mans that is well worth a read as well. That will be in the show notes as well.
It's very much a TLDR of the others.
Yes.
Well worth it. Anyway, a study commissioned for the Department of Transport has found that the roadwork permit schemes have meant significant benefits for drivers. So what this has been is a system that was introduced in 2010. The idea was to give councils more control over roadworks undertaken in the street and to issue permits for who could dig up the street and when. And of course, there was a price associated to the permits. But the idea of this, and the fact that people are trying, that companies that enjoy digging up our streets here in the UK have actually go ahead to plan ahead and think about how long they actually want roads closed and they want to cause impediments to our thoroughfares is meaning that they're getting the work done quicker and there's far less just random digging up of roads, which sounds silly and it sounds like I'm being facetious, but it was a bit of an issue for quite a long time.
Yeah. It does seem more coordinated. Well, in my town, it seems more coordinated now when it happens.
Yeah.
And it seems to be organised is perhaps stretching the word, but you know, it does appear as though thought has gone into it, and the signs are very clear saying it's going to take from this time to this time. And I have to say, as long as we're not talking motorways and what they're doing, it's generally happening in those timescales.
Yeah, I mean, we've got one. They're raising a railway bridge on just into town here, and there is very specific dates, start and end date. It's not just this will go on to September 2018. It is specific dates when they will have finished. Making, you know, rebuilding this bridge completely, significantly higher, so that there's room for electrification lines underneath. It's quite significant. For some of the busiest roads, by the way, it costs utility companies up to £2,500 a day to dig those up. So the idea is to actually get on with the work. The flip side, of course, is how good is the finish on the roads afterwards? Are people just rushing it? But to be honest, I don't feel it's any worse as a road user.
No.
Because it was pretty guff beforehand anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that's a usual thing, isn't it? That, you know, some nice bit of anti-slip tarmac has been put down and someone decides they're going to stick a phone line through it, and then it's just a bit of tarmac in the middle of that. And you're just thinking, well, obviously somebody hasn't read the spec in the council or the company who dug up, whichever it was, to say it must be replaced like for like or something along those lines, mm-hmm. you know, or equivalent. But I think this is a good thing. And as is often the case, it takes people being charged and with penalties being threatened for them to go, right, let's pay it some attention and do it properly.
France has had this for a long time. There's always been one company in France that even on local roads, coordinates the, you know, everyone has to submit to them what it is that they need to do to kind of cut up the road, and then they say, "Well, no, you're actually meant to be doing it. Yeah, we'll coordinate it, and you can all do it on this day, so that there's one day when the road gets dug up, there's one trench gets dug, everybody puts their water pipes, their electricity lines, their phone lines, all in the little pipe." And then they cover it up again, and it all happens in that very limited amount of time. It's not cheap, but it's dead efficient.
Mm. Yep. More thoughts. I like more thought being used. Anyway, list of the week. And once again, congratulations to Gavin Braithwaite-Smith, friend of the show, for producing another excellent list. This is the list on Motoring Research of the cars your dad drove and dreamed about. So, Gavin puts up a car that typically our parents would drive, and then the one they really wanted to be driving. And there are some crackers in here. I mean, we'll start off first and foremost with the Honda Accord. And this is late 90s Honda Accord. And of course, the one that we all dreamed about was the Accord Type R. And looking at the fabulous picture of that red Honda Accord Type R, reminds me that I must come up with a reason, an excellent reason, to potentially borrow Honda's heritage fleet called Type R, because so many people, I'm fed up of seeing people drive it and go, it's fabulous, and it's not me, because it just makes me insanely jealous, because I really want to drive it.
What you need to do is do a very nice little visit to the heritage fleet, mate.
I know, but I'm sure I can come up with a reason why it would be fantastic to drive it, apart from it would be fantastic to drive it.
Okay, well, keep going then.
Right, Sierra is next. I hated the one my dad had. Absolutely hated it. But of course, the driver would be actually dreaming that they were driving an RS Cosworth Sierra.
Yeah.
Let's be fair.
My father's cars went both sides of this. So he went from sort of marinas and maxis and stuff, which are too crummy to even have a good version.
Mm.
And then he went straight to a BMW 3 Series.
Yeah.
And whilst it was a 316 and he would probably prefer the 325i, it was still a 3 Series. And when you just moved from marinas and maxis as your company cars, then I think that he was quite chuffed.
Well, when the person ran up the back of my dad's car, I think he got out and shook them by the hand because he knew it had been written off. Because it was awful. It was that car was guaranteed vomit from me and my brother within 100 yards of starting out. It was not nice.
Makes me ask if the little windscreens take after you then.
Usually I'm fine, but that car triggered. Anyway, next, moving on, it's competition. It's competition to the Sierra, the Cavalier.
Are you going to go through every single one?
There's not many on here.
There are enough.
Okay, well, I'll skip a few. But to be fair, if you're going to mention the Sierra, then you have to mention the Cavalier.
That's right and proper and only fair, yes.
And how do you pronounce? Is it Calibre?
Calibre.
Or Calibre?
Calibre. I don't know.
Anyway, that just looks awful.
It does. It looks great. It's such a gaff thing. It's like, oh, this would be really cool.
Awful.
You see, far cooler than that, I think, was actually the Vectra and the Irmsha body kit Vectra. What was the one that was all white with the yellow bits on the sides, the yellow graphics on the sides,
yeah,
which I think was really cool.
Well, my dad had the Signum Irmsha one.
Oh, right, yeah.
They
were really good.
That travelled.
Supposedly. In a straight line.
But it had the ride comfort of a concrete park bench.
Yeah, that's the criticism I've heard.
Not good. Another cracker, the Peugeot 405, obviously the MI16. Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, the MI16 by 4 is even cooler.
And then Montego.
Skip the
And then the MG Montego. No. Fair enough, though, the Volvo 240 and the 240 Turbo.
Is that not a 262, actually? That one, actually, you know that car that's there, that's pictured, from the European Touring Car Championship, that I have seen that in real life because it's in the Volvo Museum in Gothenburg.
And it's not in the naughty corner, is it?
No, it's corner not in the naughty. It's not in the naughty Dutch corner of shame. It's in the awesome, awesome competition corner beside the Volvo 340 or 343 rally car and stuff. It's great. And, of course, the 850 T5 British Touring Car Estate car, which is there as well. And it's just genius.
Yep.
If you do ever happen to find yourself in Gothenburg, do go to the Volvo Museum. It's excellent. It's a bit out of town. It's awesome.
Yep. Right, well, I'll let you go through and look through some of the others, because it's as ever, Gavin's writing's just really funny. It's excellent writing, and he's picked a really interesting list, many of which I would not have picked.
Because he's Gav, he's just interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you requesting Gav to be on Rear View, he keeps saying no. We do keep trying. When I say we, I mean Andrew.
He is near the top of the hit list.
He is. Anyway, should we move on to the end finally?
I think we should.
We've actually done quite a lot of waffling this week. Oops. And finally this week is Hubnut, Ian Seabrook, his ridiculous road trip. In case you don't know, he went out to somewhere in the far eastern edges of Europe.
Romania, wasn't it?
Was it Romania? Yeah, it was actually Romania. And he bought a car for not a lot of money. And he and his mate, Dave?
I think so.
Oh, I've got that right. Drove it back.
They did.
From Romania to the UK. They were stopped by police many times. It was excellent. I followed along on the Twitter and on the Facebook when he was doing it. His whole series of 8 videos now out on the Tubes of You. Do go watch them. There'll be a link in the show notes to the playlist. He might remember to put the last one into the playlist when he's returned home from collecting the new car he's collected today. And yeah, it's excellent. Go watch it. It's absolutely brilliant. Totally Ian style. Slightly off the wall. Nerdy. Shaky. Look at the crap car I bought type style, which is absolute genius.
Yep, it is wonderful. I think we need to celebrate this sort of lunacy.
Yeah. I was almost about to demean it by calling it vlogging, and I can't do that to Ian.
No, it's not.
I really can't because it's too cool.
Yeah.
It just works. It's such an Ian thing to do.
Yep.
And just exactly the right style as well.
Yep, absolutely.
Go watch.
Mm-hmm.
Make him have many hits.
Yes, go and do that.
Right, parish notes before we round up. Sir, rear view this week?
All things go well tomorrow night, yes.
Okay, possibly a rear view this week. Don't forget about the last one. Chris Pollitt of Not Too Grand was on, and yep. He was absolutely cracking.
Still getting lovely feedback on that, so thank you very much for everybody who's listened and enjoyed it. As ever, it is the guests that make it. You know.
Well, yes, absolutely, 100% the guests that make it.
I had to say that first, because then it doesn't hurt as much.
There's also our IGO Special Edition, which came out last Friday.
Eventually.
I am so sorry. That was completely on me to do that. Andrew asked me to do that, and then I realised I was in London thinking, I wonder when Andrew's going to put out the IGO Special Edition. Oh, wait, I was meant to do that, and I only have an iPad, which means I can't fill out all the fields I need to in the audio block in our blogging system. Content management system. So there was...
There's a content management system, everybody.
It is a CMA. It is a proper content management system we use. We are that organised, folks.
Yes, and I just happened to look at Twitter just after you tweeted that.
I was amazed that you'd looked at Twitter. I was like, oh no, I'm going to have to ask him. That's going to be so embarrassing. And then you offered, and I was like, okay, awesome, if you insist. So that's out. I enjoyed recording it.
I enjoyed talking about it.
It's not just about the IGO, because we do go off on a couple of tangents, I think are quite interesting too.
There's an interesting move by a manufacturer on a technology side of things, which we applaud and hope others see and adopt themselves.
I do like mad, because this week's press car doesn't have sat nav, and it's causing me to scratch my head in.
Doesn't it?
Bewonderment, no.
The last one did.
No, this one doesn't.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
That's... So,
I need a longer USB cable to get it up so I can wedge it in front of the many digital gauges. Yeah.
That's a surprise. Anyway, sorry.
Yes, it was. I actually got the manual out to work out if it was me doing it wrong. So, yeah, there'll be special editions out at some point on another couple of cars we've had recently.
Yes.
Because somebody ended up flying back from Frankfurt the night we were meant to be recording.
Yeah, sorry about that, Alan.
Yeah, yeah. You sod, how dare you get all your transportation mixed up.
Mm-hmm. Somebody it's needs to have not... that and some mobility as a service.
Yeah, yeah, tell me about it.
We can consult
for them. I would love that. We could do. on many levels. Anyhow, don't forget, folks, between now and next week, you can give us any feedback. Share your thoughts with the show at Motoring Podcast on Twitter and Instagram, on Facebook, and on the contact page of motoringpodcast.com, the hub of all our activities. Please, if you don't mind, don't forget about Patreon. If you go to motoringpodcast.com/support, where you can see all the various ways of supporting us. And don't forget to leave a review and rating on Apple Podcasts or however your podcast app lets you do such a thing. It really does matter. Andrew, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Best way to get in touch with me is via Twitter. If you search for Crack Windscreen, you will find me there. And Alan, if people need to get in touch with you personally and find out why you've only done 3,000 odd miles in your Toyota Grim, what is the best way for them to do that with you?
Well, once I've stopped speaking like this, they can do that via Twitter, where I'm at AJP Bradley, B-R-A-D-L-E-Y. And of course, we'll both be back next week. But until then, I've been Alan Bradley.
I've been Andrew Clues.
And safe motoring.